In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
The point of stealing an election is to do illegal things after the election, to do things the majority of voters would be against. Otherwise, there is no point in stealing the election in the first place. What, risk jail or fines just for the sake of saying you won? No. The election theft is just the gateway to do what would otherwise be unconscionable. Because if your ideas were great and had widespread support, then there would be no need to steal the election in the first place. You only steal it because you knew you could not win, and because you wanted to do something that required seizing government as the means to do it, to seize control over the ability to create rules by which the rest of society is governed, how they conduct business, make sure your side's businesses get rules that favor them, how laws are made and which are passed. In the case of the Biden administration and other communist regimes, you get to decide how you will punish your political opposition. But especially, it is to seize the budget and how it is spent. There are only a few trillion-dollar companies in America: Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, and Google. All of them took decades to build, billions of man-hours, all kinds of innovation. But imagine if you could get your side of the political aisle trillions of dollars in only a few months. You do that by seizing control of the government and vote to hand your allies trillions of dollars. Just call it infrastructure, and you've funded the Green Deal, which has always been about money, not the environment. The problem is, the truth is hard to come by, because now we operate in a sphere of fog and purposeful misinformation spread by the media, spread by operatives who know the truth but spread lies anyway, by the politicians and their army of bureaucrats and allies who all stand to benefit directly from the theft. And because the media does not do the job they are supposed to do, that's just as dangerous to our future as if the vast majority of farmers decided to grow plastic plants. When there isn't clarity of elections, it's because there is not clarity of law. These people can vote, these people can't. And if any of the people who can't vote do vote, then the officials who allowed them to vote should pay a price. Because the people who voted illegally may not necessarily have known the laws. They moved, they missed deadlines, or sometimes they do knowingly vote illegally, or they're dead. But the officials do know who is supposed to vote and who isn't. That's their job. Criminals do not fear laws. They are words on paper. No mass shooting has ever been stopped by someone shouting, "Hey, we have gun laws here." What criminals do fear is the enforcement of laws. This week, we're focusing not just on the Arizona audit, but the stories around the numbers that clearly show evidence of fraud. Sorry, mainstream media, you're wrong again. And we'll look at the real-world results that are or will be happening as a result of this investigation. I'd like to welcome now Senior Fellow with the National Center for Public Policy Research and Co-Chair of Project 21 Advisory Board, and he's also a legal commentator, Horace Cooper. Horace, it's great to talk to you again.
Hey, it's great to be on the program.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, you're also a former constitutional law professor, so I'd really like to tap into that experience to set some historical context for our conversation today. Did our founders, when they put together the Constitution and the laws governing elections and whatnot, did they ever envision a time that people would be able to commit wide-scale fraud to steal an election? I mean, what safeguards did they put in place to protect voting at elections?
Well, actually, the main reason why we have an electoral college is that our founders were quite concerned about the idea of mere popular support determining who the next president or the first president of the United States would be. And so, although we as Americans play a role in the election process, primarily, it is the Electoral College, and every one of the states are supposed to set up a process by which those electoral votes are determined. they have overwhelmingly determined that those electoral votes are going to be decided by popular vote. The issue, as you raise here, is what happens if the state itself does not ensure that there is a transparent and valid result so that they can determine who the state's electoral votes will go to. In this case, that backup is supposed to be the Congress of the United States. So the founders hadn't really imagined that we would have a scenario where significant amounts of fraud occur and a politically polarized Congress would be disinclined to pay attention to that fraud. So those two things have happened at the same time. We've had politically polarized Congresses, and we've also had allegations and even demonstrations of systemic fraud, but we hadn't had the two of the things happen at the same time.
Well, as far as states go to protect the elections, too many states have almost no voter requirements. You just show up and they'll hand you a ballot. Was there such a thing as voter fraud in our early days? I'm sure, you know, there have always been cheats, but enough to tilt elections. I mean, it would have been pretty widespread fraud, I would think. What would have happened to someone back in our founding days who did commit such widespread fraud?
So, you know, there's the election of 1876, in which there were reports that the newly freed, at this point we were heading into second generation, but the newly freed men, the former slaves, in several states were completely and totally prevented from having their votes counted. And as a consequence, when the state legislature got ready to report its results, instead of having the results of, say, 6 out of 10 voters or 8 out of 10 voters, they were, in several instances, having fewer than 25% or 2.5 out of 10 voters making that determination. And when that occurred, it was the Congress of the United States that rejected the ability of fraudsters. Literally, there were reports that armed men took ballots. There were reports that others simply told the duly elected electors, you may not be the representatives of the state, and we're designating other people. When I say significant fraud, I mean significant fraud. Now, the Congress of the United States intervened and put in place several measures, including the creating an election commission to investigate, to report back, and they prevented a actual president from being seated until such time as that occurred. It is very dismaying that the significant concerns and reports of fraud during the 2020 election did not result in even something as straightforward as a House administration and a Senate administration creating a special committee to investigate.
We have an
additional problem, and that is a political decision was made by the Supreme Court to have a higher threshold for hearing election disputes, presumably so as not to get themselves in the same position that the court thought that it got itself in 2000 during the Bush v. Gore election.
Yeah.
Now, I tell you that the Bush v. Gore election should have given us a bit of a roadmap as to how to operate.
Oh, absolutely, it should have. I was going to spend just one segment on this, but this is so fascinating, I think we're going to have to come back to this. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Horace Cooper talking about fraud in the election. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're looking at the Arizona election audit this week, and we're talking with Horace Cooper, a senior fellow with the National Center for Public Policy Research. He's also co-chairman of Project 21 National Advisory Board, and he's a legal commentator, and he's a former law professor at George Mason. And, getting back into what we just wrapped up that last segment about, you were talking about the Election Commission and the Supreme Court, and I think that was one of the things that was really frustrating to a lot of people, was how on earth could the Supreme Court come to the decision that President Trump somehow didn't have standing in that case?
So it's interesting that the court's effort to make itself appear less political resulted in the court appearing much more political.
Yes.
You go to the court, and let's say it's just a simple landlord-tenant court, just a minor, small court. You assume that the court exists so that it can handle these disputes, and the court isn't predisposed to select one party over the other. If you find out that the landlord-tenant court is in some way biased and continuously rules, regardless of evidence being committed, for one side or the other, there will be investigations that occur and there will be changes. Now, this happened in the state of New York, landlord-tenant courts. Traffic court, you have the same phenomenon. Well, the federal court is supposed to be much, much more robust in the likelihood that the courts will hear and entertain disputes and look at them on their merits. In these cases, overwhelmingly, instead of issuing a ruling, which would have been preferred, saying as a matter of law, you cannot make this claim, that's at least a topic for review, a topic to appeal, and it could provide some contours in the law, even if a particular litigant doesn't prevail. But instead of doing that, most of these cases were dismissed on jurisdictional grounds, meaning that all you had to do is figure out what the magic formula was in order to get an answer from the court, also meaning that we could have the very same types of incidents occur again, and the court will have provided us with little to no guidance. I believe that our Chief Justice prevailed upon our newest members of the court, both the two newest Trump appointees, saying, you're new and we need to work together to make sure that the court doesn't create the impression of being political.
Well, what I don't understand is why none of these new people didn't say, well, this is going to clearly make us look political.
Well, one of the consequences of being new is it's hard to understand what that end looks like and what it feels like. And being told by someone more experienced, it may in fact be somewhat more influential than it might be.
Hmm.
In 2000, what we saw was cheating. Let me say that again. We saw cheating. The state of Florida was using selective recounts only in certain heavy Democrat precincts, and then allowing that to try to influence the overall number. So you take the top number and you say there were 500,000 votes, and then you pick 120,000 precincts worth of voters, and you have a recount in those, and all you need to do is about a 2 or 3% increase in just those districts, send that number, and now you say, oh, well, there's 507,000 votes, and we've now won by 1,100, or whatever the end number might be. That is cheating. The state law allowed for a whole statewide recount, and I hate to have to go through this. I watched it. I was paying attention to it, and a lot in the media were paying attention to it. A lot in the media today pretend like they know nothing about it. Ultimately, what the Supreme Court said was it was unconstitutional for this selective recount to occur. They did not say this is the good precinct to count, this is the bad precinct to count. They accepted that there were irregularities that were occurring. Those irregularities affected the outcome of the Constitution, and they did so in a way that caused voters in a given state not to have their vote counted accurately. And that, the Supreme Court determined to be unconstitutional. If people in multiple states in 2020 stopped the vote count, and then in the middle of the night restarted the vote count almost universally around the same time, you're creating a concern. We see in Arizona some 60 to 70,000 what I would call ghost votes.
Yes.
Votes that cannot be tied to any individual, any person, or any voter. Now, you can't remove the 70,000 votes, but what you would normally do if this were a congressional race, like in North Carolina, or like in a North Carolina congressional race, or like in Pennsylvania for a city council race, you have to have that election held over. That is normally the judicial solution. One of the problems has been is there has been no effort to ensure on the part of Congress to ensure, or on the part of third parties, certainly not progressives, that the voter roll list is updated and accurate. There should be no way that some 70,000, and mind you, this is just Maricopa County.
Yeah, yeah.
This wasn't even statewide.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that about voter rolls, because we just had an incident happen here in Oregon where we have now enshrined that you can't scrub those voter rolls. So I'd like to talk to you about that when we get back. More with Horace Cooper. Everyone stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking about voter fraud and election integrity today with Horace Cooper. He's the co-chair of Project 21. He also taught constitutional law at George Mason University. Because of that experience, we haven't really gotten into a lot of the voter fraud that we had planned to, but we will certainly be doing that with our next guest, Chuck Weiss. So a couple of things, as I said in that last segment there, Oregon has now enshrined that they're not going to scrub those voter rolls. Is that even legal?
So that is a technical question. Federal law, in fact, the National Voter Registration Act, it requires that states take special care to implement procedures to maintain accurate and correct registration lists for federal elections. It does not require that the state do so for its own election. Now, part of the reason why, as I said before, it would have been important in 2020 for the courts to hear these arguments is that they could provide some guidance, because there's an argument to be made that a given state may not operate in such a way, even for non-federal elections, where ghost voters or eligible participants in the voting process are able to count, except under a few narrow rules. There have been some federal challenges on the idea of what happens if a city allows non-American residents to participate in city elections. And federal courts have tended to say, as long as those elections, A, aren't happening on the same day as the federal election and are covering exclusively those local elections, they don't necessarily implicate federal issues. I'm not clear that if that came to the court today, that's what the rule would be. But what I do know is that Oregon can't simply not clearing up its rolls and then hold federal elections and let that entire mix affect the outcome.
That's interesting.
It seems like the biggest problem right now with the elections is that once you get into power, you will do anything to stay in power, including cheating. The Democrats like to say, oh, Republicans gerrymander these congressional districts. Well, we just had that happen here in Oregon where those in charge. In fact, we talked about this a lot last week with our guest, where they had the Democrats in charge, who have a supermajority, had promised the Republicans that if they stopped slow walking bills, that they would have a co-chair on the redistricting congressional districts. And of course, once she got what she wanted, Tina Kotek, who's the one that made the deal, yanked it out from under the Republicans, and they shoved through their own deal, despite the fact that it was the least supported by public input. So how do we start changing this, where the people in power can't just become kings because they deem themselves king?
So the founders really were hoping that state governments, being so close to the people, would operate in a manner making them very much accountable
right.
to the people. I grew up in the state of Texas, and since 1976, the Texas electorate and its electoral votes have gone to the Republican candidate. That's now almost 30-plus years. And yet, during the entirety of that period, the state the congressional delegation was drawn in such a way in which barely a third of all of the members of Congress were Republican. And yet, when you tallied up the votes and you said, how many votes did these eight congressmen get, how many votes did these 18 congressmen get, the eight congressmen ended up getting more votes than the 18. They weren't concerned. Progressives didn't complain. Progressives and the media, the New York Times, there was nary a story about this regular process of Texas Democrats saving two-thirds of the congressional seats and the state legislative seats for themselves, even though they were increasingly a minority in the state. It is only now where 55 to 57% of the electorate regularly votes for a Republican candidate for either governor, president, senator, or state legislature, that we are now hearing this, well, let's have a limit. If you get 57% of the vote in the last election, then you should only get 57% of the state seats. It's called Today is Thursday, and we're going to adopt a new principle, not the principle we had on Wednesday, not the principle we had a month ago, and not the principle we had a year ago. I would suggest this. It is true that there is remarkable unfairness in the operations of the state legislature when it comes to drawing these seats in places like Oregon. But one day, that wheel is going to turn. And I'd love for people to be keeping record now and making sure that they say to the critics, wait a second, why are there so many Republican in the state legislature, in the congressional delegation? You're only winning 54% of the seats, of the vote. Why are you getting 60% of the seats?
Well, that certainly sounds like the situation here in Oregon, where the Democrats are only about a third of the electorate, and yet they now have control of at least four, if not five, of the congressional districts. Horace Cooper, this has been fascinating, and I'd love to have you back on to talk some more about elections and especially the fraud part of this and how we cure all of that. But unfortunately, we are up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me on.
You know, the biggest lie this last week was that the media has been saying that the recount proved Biden won. No, that was only one portion of the audit. That's a bit like being under audit and the IRS says, yes, you claimed that you made $1 million, and then using that as your company press release. But now let's examine the rest of that. That's the audit side of things. And it found plenty of fraud, enough to overturn the election. And remember, this is just one county in Arizona, Maricopa. To talk about all of that, I'd like to welcome Chuck Weiss back to the show. Chuck is a trained scientist with a background in statistics and data analysis, skills which he has ruthlessly unleashed to fight one of, if not the biggest data scams of our lifetime, global warming. Chuck, it's great to talk to you again.
Glad to be back, Mark.
Absolutely. You know, I'd like to actually start with something that has really largely gone unreported. I've only seen it on Gateway Pundit. I know that you've seen it on Mike Lindell's TV. And this is the observations of the observers of the audit. These were volunteers who watched the watchers, watched the auditors. And in a video interview with them, who are no longer under gag order, they described what they saw. It's a quick 7-minute video, and we'll make sure that we put that up on iSpyRadio.com. And one of the things that one of the observers had said was he was reacting to the leftist media that is out there saying that the physical recount somehow justifies the counting. And he said that's simply not true. The only way to determine whether the ballots that were originally fed into the tabulator is to compare the voting records to the logs of the tabulators, logs which the county admitted they have destroyed. Now, Chuck, you and I and everyone with more than 2 cents worth of sense knows that you don't destroy your records unless either A, you want to hide something, or B, you're a member of Hillary Clinton's campaign team and you know the FBI won't prosecute you.
That's exactly right, Mark. This audit in Arizona was a disaster.
Yes.
And by disaster, I mean what they actually found. The media has absolutely spun this into one of the biggest lies you could possibly come up with. It is riddled with fraud. It is riddled with uncertainty. It is riddled with proof that Joe Biden's 10,457 vote win was not a legitimate win. There's easily enough votes that they found that are not legitimate to bring that down and turn the result back to Donald Trump. And you're right. They caught these election officials just before the audit was going to start, going into the tabulator machines and destroying the databases, destroying the voter logs and the records before the audit began, so that they wouldn't be able to use that to match up some of the things they couldn't reconcile. And the beauty of that, though, Mark, is these people are not as smart as they think they are, because the people who did the forensic audit, the Cyber Ninjas is the name of the group that did this forensic audit, they were able to track the timestamp and date to when these changes were made in the system and the data logs were destroyed. So they went back to the county recorders, the video recorders in the offices of the county clerk's offices where this was done, and they simply went back to the dates and times when the date timestamps on the computer show that this was done, and they've caught the perpetrators who actually did it, because they're on video doing this at the same time that it matches up with the records of in the computers that show when the data logs were altered and tampered with.
Right.
So these people that did this are in a lot of trouble, because it's been turned over to the district attorney's office for the state of Arizona. And if he's going to do his job correctly, all of these people need to be vigorously prosecuted and spend a good number of years in prison.
Oh,
this is very serious stuff.
It is. And we'll talk about the attorney general here in a little bit. But you said that they're not terribly smart. I don't know that it's necessarily that they're not smart. I think they just assume they'd never get caught, because no one's bothered to look at this for years and years. I mean, as we found out from Lindell's symposium, this has been going on for decades, it looks like, this kind of thievery. Getting back to the observers' video, one of the things that was very suspicious in their minds was that they noticed a lot of things, as they put it, that were not organic. You had ovals that were filled in absolutely perfectly. It was clearly not done by human hand, as if they were printed. They also saw ballots where the filled-in oval had missed the vote oval. As one said, the bullseye was here, but the crosshair was over here. They also noticed that the paper was very thin, as though it's coming out of, you know, like a cheap laser printer. rather than the cardstock that most ballots are printed on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then that's just some of the things that they found. There were a total of 57,784 irregularities, and some of what you just talked about was part of that. But there were 9,041 instances where ballots were also sent out and two ballots came back. Mm-hmm. So there's duplicates here, over almost 30,000 duplicates that were never reconciled as they should have been. They say that there were 29,557 duplicate ballots, but only 26,965 went to duplication adjudication. And of the ones that went to duplication adjudication, they never got rid of most of those. They just were counting them. And yeah. They never got completely discarded like they should have been, or dealt with the way that they should have been dealt with. So they ended up going into vote tabulations, which is part of the reason why I think these people that were working as clerks were destroying the records just before this audit started. They didn't want any matchup to some of this stuff.
Right. Yeah. And so some of the other observations by the observers was they'd watch these ballots go by. And there were these odd patterns. You'd have these anomalies repeated over multiple days. You'd have seven ballots for Biden, one for Trump, seven for Biden, one for Trump, seven for Biden, one for Trump. And the other thing that they had mentioned, too, was while the physical recount of the physical ballots pretty much lined up with what the county had claimed, what they didn't tell you, as you said, was that behind the scenes you had 17,000 plus duplicate mail-in ballots, and over 60,000 of those counted ballots were actually illegal in one way or another. And those numbers, again, are just staggering. I mean, you could easily throw out this entire election based on that.
You absolutely could, and they should. They need to throw it out. There's plenty of evidence. There's enough right now to know that that's exactly what they should do, and then they should be following through, hopefully, with criminal charges against the clerks who were deliberately destroying the data logs off the tabulator machines, mm-hmm. So that it would be harder to track everything down perfectly. And they were hoping, I think, that they could cover enough of this up to where you wouldn't find enough discrepancies to reverse the results for Joe Biden in that state, but they're wrong. We did. There's plenty wrong with it and plenty of reason to reverse and decertify the election absolutely. Results in that state.
Yep, absolutely. And there's nothing that big government types like this that are willing to cheat and steal should fear more than a determined patriot, which these people certainly are. All right, everyone stay with us. There are some numbers revealing fraud and some very suspicious activity around the audit. More with Chuck Weiss, super scientist. And welcome back. We're talking with Chuck Weiss. Chuck is a great thinker, a meteorologist, trained scientist, and fierce debunker of junk science. And of course, he himself is a very determined patriot. We're talking about the Arizona election fraud today. You know, the numbers have been damning, but there are some real stories behind those numbers as well, just as they were counting the recount there. And I'd just like to pick this up because it has to do with the very important topic of adjudication. And so, what these observers from that video were saying, and of course, and again, we'll put that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. They said some of these ballots looked like they were stained on purpose. There were large pieces of the ballot simply torn off. At times, there was more than 50% of the ballot, even 75% of the ballot just completely torn off. And those were being counted as valid ballots. When a ballot is soiled, as one of the observers pointed out, when a ballot is soiled, damaged, or otherwise marked, they are shifted into adjudication, and this means another human is determining your intent, your vote, and they have now effectively voted for you. And so here's the thing, Chuck. Over 200,000 ballots were sent to adjudication in Maricopa. If I remember right, that's about 10% of Maricopa, all of those ballots. That's a huge number where somebody else is determining how someone else voted.
Now, of course it is, and it's part of the reason why Joe Biden ended up taking the lead and why it took them so long to be able to come up with that, because the true Trump votes, they had to do something about this, just like they did in the other swing states, where they saw their algorithms weren't going to work and their plan wasn't going to work. They had to shut everything down, and as you recall, Arizona, it took them, 1 to 2 weeks after the election before they finally called
something
it?
Something like that,
I don't call him president because he's not legitimately elected in my opinion, but they called it for Biden after a week or two of going through stuff like this. And it was exactly for reasons like that. They had all these damaged ballots and they were getting people simply to keep adding the votes that they needed for Biden until he won and came over what it would take in that state to do that for him. And then they came up with 10,000 additional votes by the time it was all said and done.
Yeah. You had mentioned earlier that the security cameras had caught them deleting the log files, and I think that's going to be something that's huge going forward. But one of the other things that came out of the audit presentation was that we've been lied to this entire time in terms of security systems. There were zero security systems, and these systems were all hooked to the internet, including allowing anonymous logins from remote locations. I mean, that right there could easily be, that could easily demonstrate how these things could have been hacked. Numbers changed and all the rest.
Exactly. And it's also criminal because, you know, the same people who are being investigated right now, and this is another subject that the Attorney General of Arizona is interested in, was the fact that these people in Arizona, such as Arizona Governor Steve Ducey, has said, along with the election officials, the other guy's name there is the same as Bill Gates, not the Bill Gates computer guy, but his name is Bill Gates. He is the supervisor of Maricopa County Elections Office. They made statements before the election. They lied under to the everybody in public that was asking about this and said that these machines are not connected to the internet. There's no way they could possibly be. Well, we've got the data that shows that they were. The cyber ninjas basically proved that there were subroutines and there were programs inside those machines that had them connected to the internet. And Mike Lindell's team has the PCAPs. I mean, we know that they were connected to the internet. That data is all there now. So they lied about it ahead of time, and they certified everything afterwards, saying it was impossible for there to have been any fraud. So these people are, as far as I'm concerned, the governor of that state and Bill Gates should be in a lot of trouble for this. He was the one certifying all of this stuff and saying that it was impossible for there to be internet communications with any of these machines, and we know now that that's simply not true.
No, absolutely not. And I'd like to just kind of run through these numbers, and we'll put these up on iSpyRadio.com as well, just so that people can look at these. And these are rounded numbers, basically. So you had 23,000 ballots that were mailed in from addresses where they no longer lived. You had 17,300 duplicate ballots. You had some 2,400 votes from people, despite the fact that they'd already moved. You had nearly 2,100 who had moved out of state, and yet their ballots were counted. You had 5,000 that voted in more than one county. You had over 9,000 voters returned more ballots than they were sent. And then this is a really damning figure. 255,000 early votes did not have a corresponding record in the county's record files. And then on top of all of that, you had these fraudulent signatures that were being counted. Some were clearly blank. There was even just, you know, essentially a period in that signature window. And yet these are being counted as though they were coming from valid voters. I mean, that's just crazy that you've got essentially no signature and somehow that's counted as a valid ballot.
Yes. And to add to the padding of this, you know, Arizona passed Prop 200 back in, it's a proposition, one of their laws back in 2004 that required a very specific set of proof of citizenship and eligibility to vote in that state. Mm-hmm. And the elections office in the state of Arizona and the recorder's office basically received tens of thousands of new voter registrations, and they were all registrations that were unqualified to be able to vote in that state. And they sent letters to all these people advising them of that. But when the person who had done this left that position and was superseded by one of these radicals that took over the position in the recorder's office there, they held on to all those voter registrations, and there was no reason to do that. I think that's even illegal to do, to hang on to those once you've notified the people that applied to vote were not qualified to vote, but they did it anyway, because I think what they wanted to do was send them a federal form that and register them to vote under a federal type of ballot where they could get one of those but not state ballots to add to the total for Joe Biden. I can't run that down enough to be able to prove that's exactly what happened, but it's very suspicious when you have that many voter registrations sitting in the recorder's office that were never processed.
Yeah.
And they knew they were unqualified, but they hung on to the identities anyway.
Well, and that gets to what we've covered in the past, which is that you, in order to cheat like this, you need a pool of ghost voters, people who are fictitious or otherwise illegal, moved or whatever, that when your guy is losing, you need to be able to pull from that pool and say, oh yeah, these people totally voted. All right, we will wrap things up with Chuck Weiss coming up. We'll be talking about pushing back, where we go from here, and something you could do to help in the fight.
And we're back in our final segment now on the Oxmark Radio Show. Our first guest, Horace Cooper, told us that there are federal requirements to scrub voter rolls of ineligible voters, which could cause some real problems for Oregon's new law. Just imagine that. They'd have to send two sets of ballots to everybody, a federal ballot and a state ballot, which is going to make people wonder, now, why would they have to do that, especially sending ballots to people that don't exist? We're talking about the Arizona audit today and where we go from here. We're doing that with Chuck Weiss. And Chuck, you had mentioned that people have to be prosecuted, and it's looking very favorable down there in Arizona. The attorney general there has formed an elections integrity unit within the attorney general's office. And he has said this. This is the letter he sent to Maricopa. He says, based on information contained with the audit report, the Elections Integrity Unit expects the need to obtain documents, files, and related information during the course of their investigation. In light of our review, as well as expectation the review may lead to further investigation or litigation, this letter is provide notice to Maricopa County that the litigation hold should be in effect regarding all potentially relevant materials related to the 2020 general election. And he goes through the whole list there. That's very encouraging.
It's very encouraging, but one thing that they need to do, see, this is one thing that the cyber ninjas never got their hands on because of the absolute, steadfast, and illegally criminal refusal by Maricopa County officials to turn over the routers to those machines, those tabulation machines. They never did it, but they have it, and hopefully this election integrity thing now is going to allow those routers to be turned over to the ninja people who were doing this audit. That's very critical to be able to help with some of this, and hopefully this action will force them to do this because they haven't been willing to cooperate by normal means such as subpoenas. It's just disgraceful how the people really trying to straighten out this problem in Arizona have been treated and just steadfastly had their nose thumbed up at them by these officials in Maricopa County. Mm-hmm. All of those people, in my opinion, need to be fired, and the ones that had anything to do with illegal activity vigorously prosecuted. Because if we don't straighten this out, it's just going to continue and may even get worse.
Oh, absolutely. And the problem with this, of course, is that we know from the Hillary investigation was that they hid devices, they had secret email accounts, personal ones, and plenty of more. They used various cell phones and then didn't tell the investigators that they had those until they found out about them, at which point they smashed them. But this guy seems to know that because he also asked in his letter for, quote, as well as county-owned or personal mobile devices and any other device that would contain potentially relevant data. So he seems to be on to the tricks that Democrats play.
Yes, and hopefully with the fact that these clerks that were destroying data logs on the tabulation machines, since they got caught, hopefully people are going to sing, and these people, if they have any thoughts of pulling a Hillary Clinton by hammering the cell phones and any other devices which could have damning information on them, may think twice before doing it, because yeah. Who knows what's going to come from once they get their hands on these people in the county that definitely got caught red-handed and can go to jail for a long time. Who knows what will happen when they start to sing?
Well, and they absolutely need to go to jail. And they do need to go to jail, as you said, for a long time, because unless and until someone goes to jail, this is really meaningless, because otherwise they're just going to do it all again.
Exactly. And a couple of other things were happening, too, that the listeners need to be aware of. Mike Lindell's group, in order to free up some of this information that needs to get into the hands of courts, has filed a class action lawsuit against Dominion voting machines that was filed in the United States District Court for the County or District of Colorado late yesterday afternoon. And the plaintiffs in this case are basically whistleblowers and witnesses that Dominion has been threatening and trying to shut up and intimidate with the same way they were trying to do to Mike Lindell himself. In other words, if you had something to show where there was fraud going on with the machines, these people were threatened by Dominion, basically trying to silence them and deprive them of their First Amendment rights of free speech. And so this complaint was filed, and Alan Dershowitz is one of the chief advisors in this complaint because he's very hot and very angry over the fact that Dominion's been trying to take away the First Amendment rights of anybody who has something to say that's important for the courts to hear. And the next thing that I think would be useful for your listeners is we all care about voter integrity. I would encourage everybody to go to fix2021.com There's a petition to be signed there that's going to be filed or sent to the United States Supreme Court before Thanksgiving, along with a lawsuit that Mike Lindell has been promising everybody that he's going to file to get to try to get the Supreme Court to look at some of this information and some of this fraud and make a ruling on it, whether it's to demand more information be given to them or actually start undoing the election results of some of these states where we know there's been tremendous fraud like this going on. And Arizona right now is in the bullseye of all of this because of what was found just in one county. But the whole state needs to be audited, actually, along with all the other swing states.
Yep. Well, it's unfortunate that Democrats don't seem to be too interested in doing this because this ought to be something everybody agrees on. We should all want fair and free elections. And if you're opposed to that, it just tells me you want to cheat.
Well, and I think that this is what's going on in this country now. I mean, just we could go. This is a whole nother discussion about all the things with vaccines and what people are having been done to them as far as losing their jobs, everything. There's tons of things happening to people on a personal level right now, which goes directly to the results of this fraudulent election and who is now running the country and the tactics and all of the things that they're using to try to destroy the country with.
That's right.
And so, sure, we should all care about this. I really don't think that a lot of independents and Democrats that may have voted against President Trump in this last election did so with the idea that they knew they were going to get what they're getting now. I think there's definitely buyer's remorse with a lot of people now that they see what the true agenda of the left is. And that's the only way they can win elections. If they tried to sell this and get a true vote, they'd never get the votes they need to win. So this is why they engage in the fraud that they do.
Yep, I think that's absolutely right. And I think going forward, we have to clean up these voter rolls and we have to do away with mail-in ballots. I think that just is going to lead to fraud. Interestingly enough, the EU does not allow mail-in ballots because they know that it's fraudulent. Chuck, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been great.
Well, it's been great, and hopefully we'll have another discussion about it with some better results and as we go down the road on this and get the results we need to reverse the election and get this country back on a track of sanity.
Yes, I think the audits are spreading, and I think that's going to be the virus that infects and frees all of us. Chuck, again, thank you so much.
You bet.
Truth is infectious. Fairness is infectious. And people are waking up. Support for audits is growing. Audits are spreading from Arizona to Pennsylvania to Georgia, Texas, and even in Delaware, they are finding problems. Truth is infectious, but it needs help to get out there. Chuck mentioned Mike Lindell's lawsuit and petition that you can be part of. Mike wants signers to be able to encourage the Supreme Court to accept the bill of complaints brought by patriotic states to save our country. Head to fix2021st.com. That's the word fix. The number is 2020. First is spelled out. Fix2021st.com. And of course, we'll put that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. People must pay for their crimes. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.